Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This is the Toffee Web Podcast.
Patience again from Everton, and Mykolenko's final delivery is headed away by Ola Aina. Idrissa Konaké goes for goal and scores for Everton! An unlikely goal scorer, but such an important goal scorer. Idrissa Konaké, what a big, big goal this is. Branthwaite didn't get there, but fall for Gibbs White, who's dragged a shot wide, but that is brilliant from Jordan Pickford to deny Chris Wood. What a save that is. Point blank range, Pickford at his brilliant best again for Everton. McNeil for Decore. McNeil, he can hit them from here. He does, and it's 2-0 Everton. What a strike. Yet another massive goal for Everton.
James, first of all, we spoke to you on Monday night, but it's nice to see you smiling for once.
Yeah, I'll smile for now. There's a lot of work to be done, so we can enjoy it. After Monday, we needed to respond, and I think we did. Tough games, these are teams down there battling for their lives like we are. So to come out on top, two great goals and a real resilient performance. It was a week of reminders of what we are and who we are, and how far we have come as a team. Monday was a reality check, but you get them from time to time. So we'll bounce back today, and hopefully that continues into the week.
Goodison Park came through again as Everton won a quintessential 6-pointer over Nottingham Forest against the backdrop of another fabulous atmosphere to start the game on what might have been a seismic weekend in terms of the relegation battle. Luton Town were smacked 5-1 for a second successive weekend, and of course the Toffees put some distance between themselves and Forest, who are now the subject of an investigation by the FA following a bizarre tweet they put out on the final whistle on Sunday. If nothing else, it'll make going into Wednesday's Merseyside derby a little easier, if that's possible, given that it's almost 14 years since we beat the Red Horde at home, but it reinforces the notion that salvation is once again in our hands. Hello, Blues, and welcome once again to the Toffee Web Podcast with Adam McCulloch, Andy Howard, Paul Traill, and myself, Lyndon Lloyd. On this episode, we'll look back on that welcome 2-0 win at the Grand Old Lady and the ever-daunting clash with Liverpool. which looks like it's been made that bit harder by injuries to our two preferred strikers. And we'll touch on the possibility that Farhad Moshiri might have taken his begging bowl back to the Middle East as 7-7 partners bumble on in their attempts to satisfy the Premier League's owners and directors test. But first, of course, we start with Everton 2, Nottingham Forest 0, a huge game, a welcome result, and a much-needed positive response to that awful display at Chelsea, Andy.
Doesn't everything feel so different?
Yeah.
Instantly. It just seems to just lift off your shoulders. I've been looking at websites of like reviews of the games today. I've been watching Sean Dyche videos. I've been looking all through social media about all the flags and the reception the players got. And I don't know, maybe it's the situation we found ourselves in this year with the whole points deduction thing, but it's always felt quite knife edge this year. It either feels dreadful or it feels okay. And there's no real middle ground, especially since Christmas. And I've kind of forgotten what it's like to want to watch Match of the Day and see two half-decent goals and be better than a team and get a result whilst being better than a team. Because even against Burnley, let's be honest, could have been anything, couldn't it? And it could have been very different against Forest. I'm sure we'll go through it. But no, the feeling I've got today is just a weight off the shoulders, a huge release of tension. And actually looking at the kind of brass tacks of it, those two results that you mentioned, Luton's and ours, I mean, all of a sudden you're asking Luton to probably win two of their remaining four games to even have any chance of catching us. And that's if we have an absolute shocker from here on in. I'm not saying we are safe because we're not, but that was a giant step all in one go. And I don't think I really appreciated how big a step it was until it happened, if you see what I mean. It was only like last night and today, I actually looked at the table and sat down and thought about it and thought, wow, we're looking actually really healthy here. And it's wonderful and it's great. And, you know, if only we could have managed to put in that kind of performance, but also to take a few chances in the Fulham game, the Wolves game, the Luton game, the Palace game, the West Ham game, all at home, all that looks quite similar. Yesterday, it all kind of came together and it just feels great. And I'm really pleased for the likes of Dwight McNeil because, well, sure, we'll discuss his game, but I think he needed that. We needed that. And there we are on the table having one fewer game than Brighton this year. We're not actually terrible. It's just circumstances have made it feel like it.
Yeah, it's great to sound positive again, isn't it? After particularly after the last however long now, especially after the Chelsea game, and just great. It was great. I mean, I think you touched upon it a little bit there, Andy. Isn't football funny? And like big moments change games, and like I think a lot of them games, you know, the performance on Sunday was good, and that it was workmanlike, and it was quite disciplined, but. No better really than a lot of them games we haven't won. You know, it's just a lot. It just, you know, moments change. And if Gibbs White takes that pretty good chance, it's 1-1, and we're all cursing how crap we are. Probably, you know, what I mean, it's so funny, isn't it? The way if Idrissa Gueye doesn't for once hit the target, then you know, what I mean, these things change games, and you know, but that's what they say about, you know, you earn your luck over the season. I think certainly. I wouldn't say it was a lucky win at all yesterday. I think it was very much deserved. I thought Nottingham Forest, for their part, were pretty rubbish, really. I thought, given we said at half time, thought, well, they've literally got nothing to lose here. They're going to throw the kitchen sink at us because goal difference isn't going to be a factor for them, even though, you know, minus 17 at the time, it's still miles above Luton. They're not really going to get into a position where they're going to get overtaken on goal difference by Luton or by Burnley or anything like that. So we were just fully bracing ourselves for them to throw everything at us, and they just didn't really. Everton repelled it quite easily. Pickford didn't have a lot to do. You know, that big chance. They talk about the penalties, but I thought they were really poor. Everton just stood up to it quite well. And I think just a solid team performance. Do you not think? I don't know if there was anybody who was like, oh, God, here, the stinker. I think just throughout everybody was pretty good, you know. So it was nice to see that, and a big step forward, you're right. But not there yet. We've got a little bit of me still worries about going into the Luton game. You know, I think we need to sort of, if we're six, you know, I want to be 6 points or, you know, comfortably above Luton by the time we play them to make it, you know, say they beat us and then we have a mare against Sheffield United. You know what I mean? It's going into that last game at Arsenal be horrendous. Because that, you know, because we'd be very unlikely to get a result there. But yeah, we're looking all right. I think we should be okay. It's just hard to see Luton really getting enough points there. But Nottingham Forest will be looking over their shoulders big time. I think after they play Man City this weekend, particularly. So yeah, they've got a lot of work to do. But yeah, let's just get the job done now. But big step forward, yeah.
Yeah, massive step, and I think the Luton result the day previous has really helped with that breathing room. But to play, like you say, Paul, a lot of 7 out of 10s, it wasn't an outstanding performance, but I agree. I think Forest were poor, but then there have been sides who've played worse at Goodison this year and come away with at least a point, if not three, where we've just not been able to kill the game off. Two goals from distance, that's, I can't remember last time. I think I saw you tweet, actually, Paul, about the same thing.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time that happened. And although the first one wasn't necessarily a... It was another strange goal, wasn't it? I was thinking just then that even in this very poor run, there have been so few moments to get you out of your seat. And even the goal in the previous win against Burnley was that strange Calvert-Lewin deflected sort of effort. So there's not been that real moment, whereas having that in the second half with McNeil, that release, that's something we've missed all year. And yeah, doesn't the table look a hell of a lot better? It's, as you say, Luton will need to win two games, realistically. It's 5 points and much inferior goal difference, and we still might claim some back. We've got a game in hand, albeit against you-know-who, but that makes that a free hit. And I think after Chelsea, we needed something, didn't we? And although not a vintage performance, we definitely saw a response. I think we were set up better. I think our midfield was a lot more balanced. I think, although not a sterling performance by any means, I think Andre Gomez and particularly Garnaguy linked up well in midfield. I thought Decore was improved. And I think that three, as it stands, is probably our strongest midfield. That feels strange because certainly at the start of the season, that wouldn't have been my three. And you'd certainly be looking at Amadou Inanna as the player who can kind of do all of those roles, who's got a bit of a style, a bit of the swagger of Gomez, who's got the tenaciousness of Idrissa Garnaguy, and who's got the athleticism of Decore. But I think after that Chelsea game, that was a no-brainer, and it paid off because Forrest had a fair amount of the ball, but we looked far more threatening with it. And yeah, great for Garnaguy to get a goal. He was probably my man of the match, although you could pick from a few others. I thought Branthwaite, again, played very well. I think Pickford, although his kicking wasn't great, made a world-class save, which, again, has been another hallmark of our survival season. So, yeah, a lot more positive. And you mentioned it there as well, Lyndon, the news just coming in, but maybe a different white knight will be emerging from amongst the rubble on Bramley Moor. And that's a lift in itself, I think, ahead of Wednesday. But something might be shifting there because, boy, that needs to as well. But, yeah, first things first, let's pick up at least another 3 points in the next 7 days and just make that gap feel insurmountable for the sides below us because, yeah, 4 games to go for Luton. And I'm not totally secure, but yeah, what a great way to come out of the weekend. It feels a lot steadier now.
Yeah, really does. It was big because I watched the Brentford Luton game and I was looking at Brentford, who now seem to have got their groove back a bit. They didn't even have Tony on the pitch, but they looked so far superior to Luton. And I looked at that and I thought, well, on this evidence, the way we've been playing, we're not going to beat Brentford. So we really needed to to get something over the line against Forest, and we did. I mean, having laid out the case for him being sacked last week, it's only fair that I give Sean Dyche some credit for the changes that he made, and not just his unexpected sartorial switch-up. The players, of course, deserve enormous kudos for picking themselves up after Monday, and the return to the middle of Idrissa Gueye, as you said, Adam, was huge. But, I mean, Dyche offered up one of those big things that we critics have been demanding of him, and that's some tactical flexibility, you know, some ideas. Since we actually changed some things up. I mean, he would have been slaughtered, I think, if he tried that horrible yard dog football that we tried against Burnley. But we really didn't go long nearly as much as we have in recent games. And I think, I agree that it felt a bit more like some of those early season matches and something closer to back in December when we were actually winning games. So whether it was down to him, you know, or the players, they finally showed some faith in their ability to actually play a bit of football on the deck at times. And I think that was exemplified by the second goal, which started with some really smart work by Jared Branthwaite and made the most of the fact that Forrest just backed off and let Dwight pick his spot, which he really did, by the way. If you look at the replay, It's almost like when you designate the pocket you're going to go for in a game of pool. He just takes a look at the bottom corner and just sweeps it in off the post. It was a really good strike, and it was a really important moment for him personally, because as we've said a few times recently, he, more than most players, has looked really low on confidence since the turn of the year, really. But, I mean, he's never stopped working. So, I mean, full credit to him. And again, credit to Dyche, because there was a clear tactical shift that allowed McNeil to come inside a lot more into that number 10 role. Doucouré dropped a bit deeper. Sometimes it was Gomez leading the press. Sometimes it was Doucouré. If you follow El Bretland on Twitter, he was posting about how he's wanted McNeil to play behind the striker for a while now. And there's certainly some merits to it, because, I mean, obviously you can pick a pass between the lines, even if he can be a little bit hit and miss with his execution. But as he's shown, he can finish like that. And, you know, he's done that now, obviously, in both games against Forest. So, you know, we're still a bit iffy in the final third, particularly. I mean, for that first half hour was a bit ropey. And I did find myself wondering if a lot of that is down to the fact that we're just not coached as a passing team. So a lot of the kind of muscle memory is missing when we get into dangerous areas. But the result was all that mattered. We put ourselves in a strong position to stay up now. And assuming, of course, you know, something mad doesn't happen with our appeal, which I don't think any of us are expecting. I think we, as you said, Andy, as I said in the intro, something definitely felt like it shifted this weekend in our favour.
Talk about the release for McNeil. I don't know how it felt for you three, but I don't mind admitting, I was watching on television, I wasn't there, but when the McNeil goal went in, I felt really emotional. And it was a bit like when Anthony Gordon scored against Man United in that run that we had. That had kind of come off a bit of a setback. And this is the same. And I don't know, the first goal was like, wow, this is great. The second goal just seemed to kind of, I think it was a release of anxiety, a release of all that tension, and just a huge sigh of relief. And yeah, it felt like a real pivotal moment, not just in this season, but actually in our kind of immediate history. I know that probably sounds a little bit over the top, but it could be. It was a game that we had to win, and that kind of put the seal on it that we were going to win it. And I did feel really emotional. Maybe it was because it was actually a really good goal. And it was a moment. Ad was on about, like, we haven't had a moment for a while, because even Dominic's winner last, you know, the week before last was a weird one. And, you know, the goal at Newcastle was a bit of a, ooh, has it gone in? Kind of, you know, we haven't had that kind of big whoosh moment, you know, and to get it, and actually just to see Dwight McNeil run up to the Gladys Street and do his celebration with his, you know, his fingers on his eyebrow, and just to see him happy, I don't know, it kind of hit me, that moment. And I think for him, he's obviously had his, you know, his challenges off the pitch, and I noticed when Beto went down, you could see Sean Dyche on the coverage quite obviously say, Dwight, calm down, he's going to be all right. And I think Dwight McNeil took that really, you know, really serious. And obviously it was horrible to see your teammate go probably black out for a bit, but it obviously affected him quite a lot. I think he's quite a sensitive guy, and to see, you know, I don't know, just to see the moment that he had before that was brilliant. And I think it's a really, really big moment for us. And without our points deduction, we are now safe. We are mathematically safe without the points deduction. Yeah. And I think I know we mentioned this last week, but we were all longing for that season where we, 5 games to go, we had nothing to play for. You know, in effect, we've got that. I mean, no, really, you know, technically we have got that. In effect, we haven't. But yeah, big moment. And I really managed to enjoy that moment. And, well, just more of that, please. I mean, I've forgotten what it's like.
In that moment when we scored, I jumped up too fast for the guy next to me that I elbowed him in the chin as I with my celebrating on. I did apologise. Yeah, it was a nice pardon me, a nice moment, and we've got a real chance here, haven't we? Of getting, you know, with maybe like 3 games to go or so, of like being safe. It's actually a real possibility that we could, you know, that we could maybe argue probability. I don't know that like there's a that we'll be, you know, not going into the last couple of games worrying. That'd be nice for the first time in a few seasons, wouldn't it, I guess. And it is so funny, isn't it? Again, I've just touched upon it from like the sort of how, you know, moments can change games, but how one result can change the dynamic of what people think of a manager too. You know, like, I'm not saying everyone's all suddenly well behind Dyche, but certainly there's, you know, people sort of backing him and saying, you know, giving him a lot more credit than certainly after the Chelsea game. And there's been quite a lot of discussion last week about like, oh, we should sack Dyche, we should, you know, etc. And suddenly there's not all that. And it's funny, isn't it? Well, obviously that'll rumble on and we'll see what happens in the sum of all that. But just nice to sort of, you know, wake up on a Monday and just be, we won. This is brilliant. we haven't really had a chance to feel that much at all this year, have we? You know? So it's really, really, really nice. Bad luck for Beto, wasn't it, with that? You know, because I thought as well, I thought he was really, okay, he worked hard, but he had a pretty poor game, very poor game, I thought, against Chelsea. And I thought he did really well in the time he had on the pitch. I remember saying to Steve next was, how unlucky, you know, you have a bad game and you come on and you show some character and you link up well, you play well, you do well, and then that happens to you. You know what I mean? So, like, I wonder, looking ahead to the derby, I imagine that we don't know what the situation is with Dominic, do we? I don't think, or whether he's going to be available or not, but he obviously came off. I imagine they were probably looking at thinking, well, play Dominic against Nottingham Forest, play better against Liverpool, and then you can, you know, because let's face it, the Brentford game is more likely to go on with a result. So yeah, so that probably would have been an opportunity for Beto there too. So that's a bit of a shame for him. But glad he's okay, because it did look quite nasty for a while there. So probably the only sort of the only down on the day really. But otherwise, kind of buzzing to get the win.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, isn't it? Now that Beto's out, I wonder if we can ask Brentford if we can borrow Neil Mopay back for a week or two. maybe not. You'd imagine Chimiti would come in. Or maybe some kind of very false nine. Ashley Young, maybe. No, probably... probably Jack Harrison or a sort of Decore playing up top in the hope that maybe Dom will be, if not fit for Wednesday, then certainly fit for the game against Brentford, which, yeah, would be the one where you'd want to utilise him more. But, yeah, I agree with everything you've said. I think it's such a release. I think a big part of that as well is that second goal, because we've not had that feeling of a safety net since, I think it was a Burnley away game, and similar to the Chelsea home game as well. As soon as that second Dobbin goal goes in, you can relax, you can breathe, you can enjoy the game a bit rather than being on tentacles. And certainly, although Forrest didn't exactly, as you say, Paul, kind of come out and it didn't lead to a full onslaught. They had their chances. They had a bit more of a ball. And we did start to sit deep a little bit, like we've done in other games where we've let points slip us by. Brighton away comes to mind. So to hold on, to be that resilient, and then to have that moment later on with McNeil. And yeah, as you say, Andy, an emotional guy, but also when fit and firing and when doing things like that, using the paintbrush, as he calls it, having that swagger and that confidence again, he's one of our best players. He's one of our most effective players, certainly going forward. His work rate hasn't been in question in this run, but obviously the lack of goals, that lack of output, that has come under the microscope, and he's looked bereft at times of confidence. Certainly the Burnley home game, he was really, really, really poor. So I think for him to ride that out, to have that moment as well, that bodes well in these upcoming games, and certainly against Brentford, who, yeah, you're settling them. They've certainly improved. They've certainly turned the corner, and they've got players who can hurt us. But having McNeil there, having that balance that we seem to have maybe found, even with some injuries that are starting to bite, you would think with four. I'm really not seeing Wednesday as that game in hand, but four games after that to come, you would think there's enough there to get over the line. But it's going to be tight. It's still certainly not over, because even Burnley are suddenly back in the mix a little bit. But Forest, I mean, the word rattled gets thrown around a lot, but I think that's the very definition of it. I've got to say, yeah, you touched on it in the intro, Lyndon. It's nice when it's not you, but we're an embarrassing side at times. But wow, that's really embarrassing. I think the coverage
it was
of
remarkable,
it
was remarkable, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, and I think a big part of that obviously is the role of Clattenburg and the sort of cult of personality attached to certain people.
Paul's mate, you mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
because he was sat by him in the main stand.
Is that who you accidentally elbowed, Paul? Because
yeah.
That's for 2007. I think the fact that they came out, and I don't know what you guys thought of the decisions. I thought maybe I've seen all three of those decisions given. I think all three would be quite harsh, and I was surprised that with three at some point there wasn't some kind of evening out. But boy, have we deserved some rub of a green, particularly when it comes to, well, penalties at both ends of the pitch, really. I think we've deserved to ride our luck a little bit, and I think apart from I think the handball, you see those kinds of decisions given a lot, albeit slowed down. And you see how close Ashley Young is to the incident. I think it. I felt it would have been harsh. I think the third one, again, he looks the wrong side of him, and there's maybe a bit of contact. But yeah, I think A, we deserve that, and B, the fact that their club is releasing statements like that shows a side who are deeply, deeply concerned, and suddenly we look a little bit more stable, a little bit steadier, which I know in Everton land isn't something that necessarily lasts for a long time. But I think for now, for this next week or so, let's just ride that out, because 3 points on Saturday and, dare I say it, something midweek. And yeah, we can put our feet up and, you know, go to the Emirates and get absolutely trolleyed and not really care, which was quite fun when that happened last time, wasn't it? So if we're doing that, or even a game or two prior, that would be excellent based on where we were and certainly how low we all felt post Chelsea.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my view of the penalties was, I think if you those first two. I mean, in my view, they should never be penalties, but like you say, they have been given. But I think they would have been incredibly harsh. You know, as I think Dermot Gallagher said, that the first one, yes, there's contact, but contact doesn't always mean a penalty, which I agree. The handball, it's what you said, Adam. It was very close quarters. He's actually pulling his arm is a little bit out from his body, but he's actually pulling it in, and he's kind of turned away from the play anyway. It's not like he's not looking, but he is. You know, there was nothing deliberate about it. I know that, and I know the handball rule has changed in ridiculous fashion to remove the, you know, the deliberate part completely from it. The third one, I think if it were us, we would want that to be given. And that's kind of how I view penalty incidents, is how would we feel if the shoe were on the other foot? I think he was very, very clumsy. I think it was Ashley Young in full, you know, liability mode. I think the rest of everything else he did was fine. He actually had a pretty good game otherwise. But that's my concern about Ashley Young being the right back, is he's prone to those clumsy moments that can be very, very costly. But yeah, I think the statement that they put out was astonishing. I'm not surprised, because you know, on the telly they showed Clattenburg was deep in conversation with someone. I think after the third one, so he was probably on the line somewhere saying, dictating a message to the owner saying this is what you should say. But we were fortunate. But I think, as we've said, we deserve some luck. Sean Dyche made the same argument afterwards. We've had a number of penalty decisions this year that could have gone our way, that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you probably don't think were penalties, but they are given particularly to the top six teams. And I think I have some sympathy with what Nico Williams was saying afterwards. Not that I agreed with the fact that, you know, they should have got the penalties, but top six teams do get those decisions, and, you know, teams like us don't. So I think we deserved a bit of luck. But just going back to the sort of a credit to Dyche thing, you know, in contrast to Frank Lampard, we're picking up points against the teams around us. And I think that's the big key this season. Lampard was losing those matches. Dyche is winning those matches. And again, going back to what L. Bretland posted on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it these days, you know, he said we're top of that little mini league at the bottom of the table, which is huge. And we've got 14 points more from the same games last season than we did last season. And that is pretty much what's going to keep us up. So again, you know, credit where it's due.
I think we talk about luck. I mean, we spent the first half of the season, or probably even more than that, actually saying, "God, when is it going to go our way?" Anything. You look at the last five games. We had the goal at Bournemouth, which probably should have got us a point, but was a very lucky goal to score. We had the penalty at Newcastle, which wasn't lucky in effect, but you've seen them not given as well as given. It was a kind of a bit of a, well, it was a strange challenge, wasn't it? I mean, it just came out of nowhere. And another day, I don't think he even makes the challenge. And then, of course, we had that moment where Newcastle were very, very slightly offside before scoring a second, which would have killed the match. The Burnley goal, the Forest penalties, I probably would have given, I would have quite understandably accepted two of them, probably the handball and the second one, I thought were both penalties, to be honest. Or to put it into your phraseology, Lyndon, if it was Everton attacking, I would have been going, well, how is it not a handball? How is it not a foul? So we've had our fair share of luck, I would say, in the last five games. The only one I've not mentioned there is Chelsea, which I don't think any manner of luck that night probably would have helped us. But so it has swung a little bit, and it has gone for us, I think, and some decisions have gone for us. And, you know, all of a sudden we've got Idrissa Gueye shooting for 25 yards and it goes in the bottom corner. And, you know,
that's when you know your luck's turned.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I'm a fan of Sean Dyche, but he did say that, you know, these things do come around and we just need a bit of luck. And admittedly, I think since the break, we've had it and it's made a big difference to our season. You earn it. Of course you do. You know, you earn the luck when it comes. It's usually because, well, Dominic Calvert-Lewin doesn't have to charge down the goalkeeper. He does. And it comes off his leg and goes in, you know. Beto was in the right place at Bournemouth. You know, you earn your luck. But I feel we've had it. I don't think the first one was a penalty. I think the other two were, personally. But hey, isn't it great? I don't care.
Exactly.
Yeah, watching it in real time. And yeah, I was in the lounge there. I had a very good view of all three, and in real time, none of them looked like penalties. I didn't think, and that's the key thing, I suppose, from the refereeing point of view. The first one, I remember like seeing the player go down, and it happened so quick. The second one, it didn't look like handball to me at all. From the time you see it slow down on TV, and I don't know how that looks to Anthony Taylor right in front of it. I don't know if it's that quick too. If you're right there, you know, it presumably it was just far too quick for it to to be a factor. The third one to us looked like Ashley Young did really, really well to get back in there and win the ball. But obviously, when you see that slow down, it's a foul. But I'm with the view of same of you, Lyndon, of like contact doesn't mean foul. And penalty, the threshold, you said it a few times, the threshold for a penalty should be higher. It's gone way too soft, that. And I think they need to sort of really try and address that this summer ahead of next season, because have much more clarity of what is and what isn't a penalty, I think, would really, really help everyone really next season. Because there's far too much of like, oh, well, hang on, that was a penalty in this game and we didn't get that, and why was that this? And, you know what I mean? I think even the big team, I think everybody can probably point to several incidents throughout the season, really, when you feel that you've been hard done to. Well, yeah, Mark Clattenburg, he's not my friend. I've been fortunate enough. I've got a friend who's in the lounge there most batch games, and every so often he invites me along, which is very, 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 very fortunate to be able to go so long, because it's a great experience, a great view of the game, and where them seats are, they're a bit on the left hand side, and that's a few rows behind where the travelling team will sit. So they normally have like two or three rows, and sometimes a bit sparse, sometimes they're pretty full. And I've never seen anybody have somebody run up and down the stairs for them the whole game long. That person you're probably referring to, who's speaking to Lyndon, she was up and down them stairs the whole game. Or back and forth. Where it was like, what do we do with this message and all that? I just found him very obnoxious the way he was behaving himself there. Now, obviously, we know what was going. Now we know kind of what happened, what was going on. Not only has he gone and released the statement from Twitter, he's also gone and released a piece in the Daily Mail. And I really question the integrity of that. I don't think that's right that should be allowed to go into a national publication or the UK's biggest selling newspaper. I think it is. I don't think that's right that an ex-official with as much sort of public opinion about him. I don't think that should be allowed. That. Really, I can even question whether they should be allowed into them roles at football clubs, having been officiated. And we don't have to look very far, do we? It was a long time ago, but we don't have to look very far about like what a horrendous performance was for Mark Clattenburg. You know, when like, blimey, if you're talking about like, stonewall decisions going against you, then I can show him a video of one particular game, which I'm sure we'd all like to speak to him about. So, I don't have much sympathy for Nottingham Forest. The way the fans were singing about like the FA and all that, and saying like how corrupt it is, and we weren't getting any sympathy from them when it was us with a 10-point deduction. You know what I mean? I think they've been, given the circumstances of their breach, I think 4 points have been being got off quite lightly, and I'm quite surprised the way they've gone after this with while they got a case pending. I know it's independent and all that, but whoever's going to be looking at this, they can't help but see and hear this noise of what's going on, and it could well work against them. You just don't know. So a bit surprised with the way they've gone about this. But I think as well, Everton, showing how to behave, and the Everton haven't washed the dirty linen in public, so to speak. They've held counsel the whole time, really, Everton, throughout all this. And, you'd say that from that side of things, they behave very, very well. So let's just keep doing it. Keep things in-house. Keep doing what we're doing. Let them worry about themselves and make themselves look foolish publicly instead. And they're certainly losing the psychological battle, and they could lose the battle to stay in the league the way they're providing. It just feels like a bit of a mess there. And, I don't know. Wouldn't be shocked if they just slip. If Luton can get a result or two, even Burnley now, they got to play Burnley. They could be in a bit of trouble there for us. I never thought that would be the case.
Yeah, and I guess it goes to show hiring a referee and analyst does not necessarily lead to improved performance from other referees, because it's a made-up job. He's not doing a very good job of it, is he? Bizarre. Yeah, the whole thing. And yeah, great to have that insight, because yeah, watching on TV, it just kept cutting to him, and you could see him deep in conversation. But the fact that, yeah, there was so much activity there behind the scenes when he has no control over it. It's not like he's the VAR official in the stadium looking at the screen. He's employed by Nottingham Forest. Bizarre, but like you say, Paul, it plays out in our favour. I think we did conduct ourselves well. We did with our performance. And that bit of composure, also a group of players who've, now they've had to do this a couple of times now. I mentioned last time out the likes of Mikalenko, who in a very short space of time and at quite a young age for a footballer has been through a lot in his time just at Everton on the pitch. And there's a few others. There's the likes of Garner Gay, who was relegated when he played for Aston Villa, wasn't he? But on the whole, a pretty successful career. Man, he's come back to a club and he's now having to go back there again. You've got older pros like Ashley Young and Tarkowski again, who've been involved in that sort of battle. Jordan Pickford now, again, having to go back down to that well. And at times it's felt very flat over the last couple of months, and I worried that maybe there wasn't that same stomach for it. I think I questioned, certainly after the Chelsea game, whether we had that same backs-to-the-wall ability. And although Forest weren't a great side, we did show elements of that, certainly with the fantastic save Pickford made. And I think generally we were quite tight, apart from Tarkowski's sort of soft header that went through to Morgan Gibbs-White. We were good. We were solid. We were more of what I'd expect from a Sean Dyche side that we've seen flashes of and we've seen moments of. We were a lot more structured. I still think we can be a lot better from set pieces, because, yeah, the curse of Adam talking about potential set piece takers has really afflicted Andre Gomez, who...
yes, it has.
Yeah, he's really, kind of daisy cutters to the first man, which isn't exactly what we'd like. And I think...
Sorry, Adam.
Yeah, go on.
Did you just refer to yourself as in the third person?
I did, yeah. I'm actually the podcast's Adam Analysis. So
sorry,
and I'm doing a bad job. but yeah, I think I have really cursed Gomez. I think I did the same thing for Ashley Young as well, and that's something I'd like to see a bit more of, because we all know the threat we can offer at set pieces, regardless of who's playing up top. You look across the pitch and we've got height, we've got power, certainly our two central defenders. So I'd like to see a bit more of that, particularly midweek as well. And maybe McNeil looking a bit more confident, having that spring in his step again. Maybe he's a man to take over again. I think Ashley Young, you touched on, Lyndon. I thought he was okay, apart from potentially giving away a hat trick of penalties. He was
apart from that,
yeah. On another day, I'd be incandescent. But I think he was pretty solid, and I definitely prefer him as a right back to a right winger. There's no question on that. I thought Harrison was pretty quiet though, and I think he, to me, does not look like a long term solution. He looks like a piece of a puzzle that works for Dyche and works for this team in the here and now. But I think if we're going to progress, I certainly wouldn't be looking to sign him permanently unless it was as some kind of squad / utility player. I thought he was quite poor, I've got to say. And maybe Dan Juma might find some minutes in the next couple of games. I'd like to see a bit more of him before he inevitably leaves. And I saw you mention as well, Lyndon, on Twitter, formerly known as Twitter. I saw you mention the fact that Idris Garnagay's contract is up, with a year to go. And I think that, to me, feels like a piece of business that we've probably got to get resolved once our future's secure. There's quite a few others in there, I know. So it's going to be a summer of upheaval for sure. But I think certainly another season of Idrissa Garnagay makes a lot of sense. His experience, his nous. He's maybe not the same force as he was during his first spell at the club. But I think in games like this, he's the player in there probably alongside Pickford in terms of experience and pedigree and playing at the very highest level, you know, playing Champions League football, playing international football. He's our man really, isn't he? And I think his performance is very promising for this run-in, particularly these two games to come. So that's a positive, I think, that's come out of the weekend. There were others as well. I just feel better. Like you said earlier, Andy, I just feel like a weight has come off, and it's amazing that that's happened with, what, two sets of results, really, our own and Luton today before. It's amazing how it can turn a sixpence after, well, a week ago today, we were just getting strapped into a night of absolute torture. So for it to turn this fast, it does show, I think, that, you know, Dyche has he's done his remit, hasn't he? He's done his job. He's not done a clap, but he's actually done his job. And I think there's... whether that still means he's a long-term option, I don't think so. I'm probably not as kind of optimistic about him as maybe you, Paul. But I do think for this run-in, if we can show more of that, then we'll pick up at least one, if not two more wins out of this next set of fixtures, and that'll be enough, won't it? So, yeah, positive.
Yeah. No, my point about Gay was that there's going to be so many outgoings this summer. We've got players out of contract, other players out of contract. We've got loans coming to an end. We've got very little coming through from the academy, the players that are ready to make that step up. I mean, this is a conversation for another day, but the summer and next season is already scary, in that context. And given that, you know, any sales that we make will probably have to go straight to the bottom line, and unlikely to be used for major squad overhauls. So we could be running on very bare bones for a while. But as I say, conversation for another day. But, you know, just a Gay, he'll be 35 in September, but he doesn't look like a 35-year-old. He's in fantastic condition, a bit like Ashley Young, I suppose. He really looks after himself. And I think that, you know, were he injury prone, were he showing signs that he's really slowing down, then I'd find, okay, you know, don't spend the extra 80k a week on keeping him for another year. But I think that given that he isn't part of that 100k a week club, and that on his day, you know, when he's probably our best midfield player, I think it would be madness to let him go. But I mean, just to wrap up the Forest conversation and the relegation picture, I think the point about their attacking the referees as publicly as they have is that you're getting the conversation sort of surfaced on Twitter yesterday, that you're getting into that territory where, a bit like in Turkey, where there's so much, so many attacks on the integrity of referees that it's actually compromised their authority and, you know, the legitimacy of the game. And I think we're in very, very dangerous territory here with what Forest have done. So I hope that, you know, the FA and the Premier League come down with hard on them. Gary Neville's point about the fact that there are ways of doing this. Like, usually it's the manager who, you know, takes the fall, takes the fine, gets the club's message of sort of disappointment out there during a post-match interview. But to go as hard and publicly as Forrest have, I think, like you said, Adam, or whoever said it, was it's a club that's really on the defensive now and feeling the heat. And yeah, a bold decision to kind of go in with 2 feet just before an appeal decision on your PSR breaches. But I mean, just looking at the run-in, it's unfortunate because as the further we move away from danger, the more the relegation picture thing actually becomes a bit more exciting to watch. You can kind of approach it more like a neutral. What a luxury! but you look at Burnley and what Burnley are doing. I mean, that would be one of the all-time Houdini acts, but unfortunately, I mean, they've got to go to United, they've got to play Newcastle home, they've got to go to Spurs, and then on the final day, obviously, they host Forest. So, you know, if they can get three miracles in those games, then it might be on for them. Forest have got City at home, obviously. Then they go to Sheffield United, they've got Chelsea at home, and obviously that trip to Burnley. Luton, I wouldn't really want to be going to Wolves right now if I were for Luton. And then clearly the game against us is really their kind of make or break if they're going to catch us. And then they got to go to West Ham, who West Ham are turning into a bit of a basket case themselves. Mm-hmm. And then they play Fulham, who are really not in good form right now. So it's interesting, but I'm really hoping that we've now done enough and that we can just kind of finish the job. Certainly, we'd be approaching Wednesday's game with a lot more despondency had we lost to Forest. As we touched on earlier, it's going to be a bit tough because we're not sure if we're going to have a recognised senior striker up there with Beto. Beto will certainly be out, obviously, because of the concussion protocols. Calvert-Lewin seemed to take a knock to the knee. This wasn't actually his hamstring that forced him off. Deitch was saying that he kind of took a clash of knees, so it's possible he could make it, but if he doesn't... Andy, do you think Youssef Chimiti gets the nod? I mean, we know so little about this fella because he's hardly had any minutes, but it'd be an interesting one.
100% Chimiti for me. Yeah. No real debate about it in my mind, because he would still allow the rest of the team to kind of do what it does and play as that kind of a bit of everything striker, really. I know we don't know too much about him. We don't even know whether he can really do that, but the kind of frame he is and the kind of clips I've seen of him in the past when playing in Portugal, he can do the link up. He's got a little bit of pace in behind. I would play Chimiti. I think putting someone like Dan Juma up there that hasn't had a load of football because he's been injured kind of changes how we would want to approach the game. I think the other 10 can at least kind of do what they did against Forest, if you look at it like that. What has changed, I think, is that, you know, if you consider even where we were a week ago, especially where we were a week ago, it felt like a derby that probably meant so much to both teams for different reasons. And I think what those 3 points to us do is they make it a little bit freer for us. It's almost like it's Liverpool's, well, I mean, it's not their cup final as such, but that they've got to win every game. They have to win the game. And I know we would love to win the game, but what the weekend has done is it's probably taken a little bit of pressure off it for us. And I think that's a really good thing. And I think it's just changed the dynamic of it, really. I really enjoyed Gomez's performance. I'd be really happy to see him play against Liverpool with Garner Gay in there. I was wondering earlier this morning in a bit of a daydream, I wonder what kind of wages it would take to keep Gomez on a lesser wage. Because if you think about what we might have to spend, might not be much, and those who are here are often easier to get and cheaper to get. And he's got real quality. I'd love to see him have another, you know, a good chunk of the game. Apart from that, I wouldn't change an awful lot. I'd love to see Branthwaite play against their front line again. I thought he was brilliant. But yeah, it feels like the dynamics changed this week, and we can kind of we can set up like we did the other day. We can have a go. And it's, you know, now not the be-all and end-all, the result. And if we manage to pick up even a point, I mean, a point changes it quite a lot, because...
It does, yeah.
Luton already have to get 2 wins. I mean, they would need something from 3 of their 4 games if we managed to get a single point. So, yeah, I mean, take a point now, it'd be brilliant. And I think that would be a really positive week.
Yeah, we'd snap the hand off a point, wouldn't we? Let's be fair. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think Chimita, if Dominic's struggling, you know, it didn't sound too negative going into a derby, but if he's not 100%, then for the Brentford game's obviously more winnable. I'd be happy enough having Chimita playing. I mean, he did it at Anfield last season. Sean Dyche, didn't he? He played Ellis Sims. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, so it's not like, you know, unknown for him to do it. And I think, to be fair, Chimiti, I mean, Dominic's been available for a lot more than any of us really thought he would this season. Unfortunately, the goals haven't followed that. But I think, you know, we would have expected Chimiti to have played more games, because purely down to Dominic's lack of availability as we would have expected to be the case. Wouldn't think he'd put that many games together, Dominic. So Chimiti would have played more, I'm sure. But they've always had Beto and they've always had Chimiti to count on. Calvert-Lewin to count on throughout the season. So it feels like the kind of the first time when both of them might not be available, I think. So Chimiti, yeah, might well get his chance there. So it'd be interesting to see. Just on the little cameos we've seen from Chimiti, I get the impression he can look after himself. You know, he's feisty enough. You know,
likes a yellow card, doesn't he?
it's time on pitch to yellow cards. It must be quite hilarious, I think.
And he got a red. And he got a red for the reserves for the under 21s as well.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
So I'd be happy enough with that. In terms of sort of any other changes, I don't know about Andre Gomes in a game like this. I mean, he had to come off after a certain amount of time against Nottingham Forest. Again, a bit like sort of Dominic, I suppose I'd probably rather spare him for the Brentford game in a way. Onana should be pretty fresh, and Garner. I'd be happy enough to play either of them. I don't know if Sean Dyche wants to play Onana. Didn't want to get him on the pitch yesterday, so he's trying to teach him a lesson for his sulking at Chelsea, perhaps.
I was going to ask about that, actually. What did you make of the fact that Onana didn't even make it onto the pitch?
I was surprised. I remember at some point in the second half saying to Steve X was, I think we should take Gomes off here and push the corner up and get an arm on to keep the ball a bit better. And not long after that, you saw Dyche whistling down there, but we couldn't even then plus sheets. You still got an obstructed view to your left if you're trying to see who's warming up down the side there. So it took a little bit of time to figure out who he was whistling that to come back. At the Garner. So. I could envision that change happening. Gomes getting a bit of a rest ahead of the weekend's game, and you got him handy on the bench if needed. He's very good off the bench, Andre Gomes. So right back's a bit of an issue, because one thing that all this noise from Nottingham Forest has highlighted is that Ashley Young, probably should have given away a penalty at some point there. So that's in the public eye now. Is he going to be so lucky if that happens against Liverpool? I think it'd be quite quick for them to go, oh, it's a penalty. I was comfortable enough in playing against Nottingham Forest there, Ashley Young, because I thought Hudson-Odoi always cuts inside onto his right. He's never going to try and go around him there. So given Ashley Young's sort of like lack of pace, I suppose, but his experience, he knows well enough how to make him sort of stay inside. And no one's going to have to go around them. Up against someone who's going to go around them, like a Diaz from that side, I'd really sort of be concerned about Ashley Young. We got sent off in the first game. But I'd also worry about Ben Godfrey there. And I'm assuming Seamus ain't quite ready either. So it's a bit of a pickle at right back. Maybe it is time for Garner at right back. I don't know. But I'd be interested to see what happens there. Before the Forest game, I was probably thinking, it kind of feels like when you're playing Liverpool, it kind of feels like, they're the Harlem Globetrotters and we're the Washington Generals, and we've just kind of got to sort of, turn up and get our bellies tickled and sort of like, But given the result, it feels like a bit of a free hit. It feels like we can have a good go, and why not? And, just go for it. If we go down, hang in there. We've actually got some good subs available there. And who knows? The crowd will be up for it. Let's just give it a bloody good go.
Oh, hey, hey. I like that. Adam likes, I should say. I really enjoyed that. I'm then mused as he went on to make his next point. I don't think Chimiti will start. I would like Chimiti to start because I think he has shown promise. But looking at his minutes this season, I think the most he's played was that 45 minutes against Doncaster where he started the game and was very poor. And then beyond that, it's been what we saw on Sunday, very, very brief cameos. I don't think he's played longer than... But the longest he was on the pitch was when we were chasing that game against Wolves early on in the season at Goodison, where he played 24 minutes. All the others are about 10 minutes. I just don't see Dyche starting him, albeit I think we mentioned Ellis Sims starting the last derby, but we were so bereft of options then. I think he will do some kind of false nine. I think he'll find a way to keep what he would see as our stronger side out there on the pitch. I think the right back position, as ever, you say, Paul, it's a pickle. I think it has been all season. Emo, we're weirdly quite stocked with potential options there, but none of them really feel too comfortable for whatever reason. And yeah, you're right. I think the spotlight would have been on Ashley Young anyway against a pacey front line. But after Sunday, as you mentioned as well, the previous derby, I'd be really worried about him. And also, starting multiple games in 7 days at his age, he's not necessarily got the legs for that. So that would concern me. I don't think it will concern Sean Dyche. I think he'll play Ashley Young as well. And I see either James Garner or Inanna coming in, and we probably move someone out right, maybe James Garner on the right, and then play someone like Harrison sort of through the middle. That's where I see it going, particularly in a game where you'd expect us to have less of a ball, and he'll think Harrison's a nuisance, try and keep the game tight and throw Chimiti late. That's how I see it going, although I did also see Ben Godfrey starting the game against Forest after the injuries at Chelsea, and that didn't happen. So clearly, I'm not very good at this.
Adam's not very good.
Adam's crap, isn't he? Sad Adam. I think you're right, Paul. It's a free hit. I hope we do go for it. I think if we put in that same kind of performance that we did on Sunday, we didn't exactly grab the game by the scruff of the neck, but we were less scared than we have been. We looked a lot more comfortable on the ball, and I think we've all said it. I think Gomez was a big part of that in terms of looking after it. And again, yeah, I'd like to see him play, but I'd prefer to see him start against Brentford. So same position as Dom. If they're not 100% or if the legs are tired, give them a rest. Put out some kind of side, and I think we can hurt Liverpool. We were very unfortunate with that red card in the first game, and obviously the Kanate decision that followed, which, when we talk about the rub of the green, that was certainly one of the major kind of explosive moments early on in the season when it came to officiating. So yeah, who knows? Let's ride our luck a bit, but yeah, it makes it a hell of a lot easier going into it with 3 points. With the table looking at it as it is, and with this as the game in hand, this is the moment just to see. Well, you know, we could stitch it up, couldn't we? We could make things absolutely rubber tight by the time we go into that game against Brentford, really, with a win, because it would be pretty far for Luton to come back from this. So that'd be great. A point would be wonderful. Let's do it.
It would be great. It would accomplish our goals on two fronts. Obviously, we get a point, and then, you know, we compromise Liverpool's title charge. So that would be great. I would rest Gomez. I agree with that. I would go 5 at the back for this one. I'd put 3 in, and maybe bring Michael Keane in. I'd rest Ashley Young. I'd play maybe Jack Harrison as the wing back on the one side. Maybe, you know, McNeil on the other. I'd give Dan Juma a run out at some point, maybe off the bench, because I'd like to have him sharper and ready for those games against Brentford, Luton, and Sheffield United. I think, I mean, if Dom's not fit, then I think why not give Chimiti a run out? I mean, I think he's going to, you know, it's be quite the baptism of, it's not really a baptism of fire, obviously he's played before, but it'd be quite the challenge against Liverpool's back line. But what I'm hoping for just in general is that some of the confidence has come back. Because I think if we're going to get anything out of it, you imagine it might come from something special from the likes of McNeil, you know, provided it doesn't come from a set piece. Although, I mean, goals from dead ball situations really seem to have dried up in recent weeks. But yeah, I'd certainly take the point and just try to establish a little bit of momentum now.
I think it being under the lights helps us as well.
Yeah.
If, you know, if it's a 12:30 kickoff on a whatever day they do a 12:30 kickoff these days, I think that probably plays into Liverpool's hands as the better team with the better players. But I think you know, with a derby, especially with us, you kind of need all the ducks to line up in the right order, don't you? And I think it being that kind of atmosphere, I think, helps us massively. So that's good. And on the, just whilst I think of it, on the atmosphere, it sounded great on Sunday, especially for an early kickoff. And I know there was such a downer after the Chelsea thing, and I felt it too. We all felt it, but God, we've got so much to be proud of in our fan base, in the people that this club means the most to. You know, it didn't surprise me, but that was where the emotion came out a little bit for me watching it, and when the second goal went in, because you kind of saw that Gladys Street kind of bouncing and people's happy faces, and we just haven't seen that enough, quite frankly. And it was just a lovely moment, and it kind of hit home, like, wow, those guys are doing it again. You know, they're dragging this team. And it is, I know probably every fan base thinks this, but it must be quite unique. Because, wow, what have those guys gone through?
You say that, but there was a comment was made after the Luton-Brentford game where they were quite surprised at how flat Kenilworth Road was, both from a fan's perspective and their own players. They said that there wasn't this sense of occasion, that there really was like a massive game. You know, I know Forest have quite a good home atmosphere, but I remember Leeds United fans themselves trying to sort of, when they were battling relegation against us, trying to recreate the Goodison effect, and they couldn't do it either. I mean, I've said it before, it's something that you cannot take for granted. It is something, there's something magical about our club and our fan base. Now, through all the adversity, even after Monday at Chelsea, which really was a kick in the nuts, if you're, you know, particularly if you're a travelling fan who have had to put up with so many poor performances. And I think back to the days under Benitez when they're, you know, some of the matches where they were just so badly let down, and yet they keep going back for more, like masochists. You know, every now and then they get rewarded. And obviously the reward this season will be staying up and you know, living to fight another day. But yeah, it's a big thing. It's a huge part of the club, and I think that's what the move to Browningmoor Dock, I think the thing that makes me confident that we'll be able to recreate those kinds of atmospheres is just the people who are going to be there. You know, yeah, all the design is will be there to maximize it, but the people who will be going there will be the same, and that's the key.
You see the some of those flags, like, you know, the green Everton Our Magic flag was back, and the old kind of the old shirt with just EFC and like the yellow tower and crests underneath it, and you know, you see those kind of, they're almost like icons of like our past, and yeah. I don't know, it was just, you know, like Everton Our Magic, it was a bit of magic for me, watching that and seeing that and kind of feeling that through the telly. Unfortunately, I wasn't there, but you can't really put a price on it. We've got so much to be proud of, and I know this club has been a mess, and it's been a mess for a while, but we still have so much to cling on to, and so much where you can kind of still puff your chest out and go, yeah, I support Everton, and it still means something. And it's still brilliant. And just days like Sunday, haven't happened enough. But it's still all there. And I think we've got to cherish that, really.
Something so iconic about Goodison Park as well, though. That's, you know, I think it just, like, it mixes that support in so well. And, like, yeah, what the 1878 are doing with they look beautiful, absolutely beautiful when they came out. The Gladys Street and the Park End, it was absolutely fabulous effort, that. And yeah, I think, I don't know, it just fits so well with Goodison Park. I mean, I'm sure you're right, Lyndon, and the supporters are such that, you know, we'll get there with Bramley Mark with the support, but it's there's not many things more beautiful, I don't think, than a packed Goodison Park like that with them flying. That's one of the best sights I think I've seen on Saturday, because normally I'm in the Gladys Street and I don't really get to see or the, you know, I mean, I'm normally sort of holding a flag, or got, I've had Sean Dyche on top of me a couple of times. Not,
like, big reveal.
picture that. Paul says that, gone into the moment there. But no, it looked absolutely beautiful. And it'd be great to hopefully let's roar them on Wednesday night, and who knows. Two quick points on the derby before I finish, at least. Set pieces, that's gone away. We haven't scored many set pieces for a while, so surely we're due one. And I thought Abdoulaye Doucouré had his best game for a long time. And I thought he was excellent, actually, at Doucouré. Probably even so, I slipped under the radar a little bit, because he was much, much, much like his old self, I thought, Doucouré on Saturday. Also, long due a goal. So maybe two things there that could sway in our favour, because I'm always one of them. Maybe it's just glass half full, but I always think, well, if you've been in this long run, surely that's got to change at some point. Hey, it's been a long time since you beat Liverpool at home too, so that's got to change at some point. So maybe it can happen.
I feel more confident now. That's good. And also delighted to know that the next time I hear Sean Dyche talk about feel, it might be in relation to you. So, I think going back to Goodison, I mean, it's again showing just how much things change in a week. I was kind of quietly, well not that quietly actually, when we did the pod, relieved about the fact that I wasn't going to be going on Sunday, just because of how poor that was, and also the sheer nerves. And then, like you say, you do see it through the TV, you do see the spectacle of it when it's not, you know, cutting to Mark Klattenberg in the stands, but you do feel that ground through the screen. But when it's rocking like that, when you're bouncing out after a 2-0 win, there's no better place in the world, is there? And then straight away, that's exactly where you want to be. So hopefully we can do the same on Wednesday night. I agree, Andy, under the lights, best time to play them. Wouldn't it be brilliant? I've really got carried away in the moment here. But it would really give us, again, said it earlier, there have been so few real joyous moments, and Sunday was a bit of that the rest of this season. And yeah, certainly when we go back over the last couple of seasons, we've been starved as a fan base. And as you said, Lyndon, most fans who did drag themselves down to London last Monday, who turn up week in, week out, who've had to just go back down to that well time and time again, we shall not be moved, and drag this side, whatever side it is, over line so many times. They deserve, we all deserve, I think, that moment. If that can be Wednesday, oh great, Chimiti hat trick, here we go.
You heard it here first.
Said Adam. Said Adam ambitiously.
just quickly, by way of a weekly question, Andy wanted to know, if you were Sean Dyche and you were changing your outfit for the game, what would you wear on the touchline?
Well, it was more personal preference, actually. I mean, I'd like to think that one day Paul Traill will be the Everton manager. I would like to know what he would wear, and what Lyndon would wear, what you would wear, Adam. So it's your own personal choice. If you had to stand there, what would you wear?
Probably be tracksuit, I think. Manager, I guess. I don't know. That's probably how I'd see it. I don't. For the type of character that Sean Dyche is, I'm astonished he's been wearing a shirt and tie for so long. To me, I've never quite been able to get my head around that. He's a bit of a scrapper, isn't he? You know what I mean? He's in the ref's ear quite a lot. You know, he's always barking instructions out, and yeah, he looks perfectly smart in the suit. But it just always strikes me as a bit of a tracksuit manager. So I've never quite, you know, seen him there like in his tracksuit. Like, man, that's a bit odd, isn't it? So I think I'd probably be in a tracksuit just for comfort more than anything else too. I think I'd go with that.
And with the tracksuit, would you have football boots on, or would you go trainers?
Good question.
Oh, trainers. A bit of a weird wearing boots, wouldn't it? Unless you're going to take part in the warm-up or something. That's a PT on the top, on the on the top left.
Nice.
Just in case, just for the avoidance of doubt. But yeah,
I think if I was, so I mean, if I was channeling Sean Dyche, I'd probably wear like chainmail, something like that, and go for a kind of suit of armor look. But in my head, I'd like to think I was a sort of Guardiola with a sort of roll neck sweater, some kind of very expensively assembled hoodie, like dressed down but also dressed up. But then I feel like if I ever did get the Everton job, it would be very brief, be brilliant but brief. So on that sort of note, I'd probably go for what Big Dunk did, which was a bit like dressing for a job interview that you then don't get. So I would go suit and tie, do it smart, big wave to the Gladys Street, and then bow out very gracefully, suit and booth.
Because I could see you in a three-piece.
Yeah, three-piece and maybe 3 pounds. Dapper, yeah, dapper. I like that. So yeah, probably that. Sometimes a continental look. I think me in the sort of tracksuit shorts look, I'd look like an imposter. So. How about you, Lyndon?
I'd probably go for the Big Dunk look, you know, the suit and the tie. I think when I coached my kids when they were young, I was a tracksuit manager. But I think if you're at Goodison, you've got to do the, you know, you've got to look the part. But we can just finish off very very quickly, touching on the fact that there was a New York Times article saying that Farhad Moshiri has enlisted Deloitte to basically shop the club around the Middle East, it seems, in search of a different buyer other than 7-7 Partners. I mean, no one really knows what's going on. What little is out there, most of it comes from Paul Dieske, who's obviously got his ears to the ground on this thing. He's always been adamant that 7-7 will never have the money. So, and it's only been a matter of time before Farhad Moshiri caves and says, okay, I've got to find somebody else, even if it means less money for me up front, which it may or may not do. But and I think anyone who's looked at 7-7 Partners has had a bad feeling about the possibility of them taking over. If you put aside what we know about them as a business, how they started, where they make their money, just the fact that they're struggling, it seems, to come up with the funds, and a lot of their access to funds, it seems to be being taken away bit by bit. I think it smacks of someone who would need to come in and not only exploit the fans to make their money, but also, you know, probably take control of the stadium and sort of try and get their insurance that way. So it can only be a good thing, but the other side of it is, if it's going to be another sovereign wealth fund, how do we feel about that?
It's just going on for so long, this. It's hard to really, you know what to say differently to any. I mean, like, I get a little bit of like skepticism of that kind of reporting, and that it's they've got Deloitte to go and sound up Middle Eastern buyers. I mean, sorry, but anyone in the Middle East surely is well aware, if they're looking to buy a football club, of what's going on. I mean, like, you know, it just feels like a bit of a tenuous sort. I don't know. Who knows what's going on? I mean, surely Farhad Moshiri's got to be thinking, I've got to be looking elsewhere. I've got to, you know, if nothing else, but for the contingency, if it does all fall through. We just got to wait and see how it unfolds, really. But It just never feels right, does it, with 7-7-7? Nothing's, it's never filled you with any confidence, has it, really, at any point? And the longer it rumbles on, the kind of less confident you can be. But I guess it's given the result you were there, I suppose. Even though if this story comes out after we've just lost the Forest at home, then it's all sort of like, you know, it paints a different picture, doesn't it? But because we've got the result, we can probably look forward to a little bit of things on the pitch rather than off it, I suppose. It's the way I'm trying to look at it anyway.
Yeah, I don't think any of us are surprised that 7-7-7 haven't come up with the funds on time and do not therefore look like a viable owner. And Josh Wander himself just, I don't know, he looks like a human vape, doesn't he? He just looks very untrustworthy. So
human vape.
I think anyone beyond that, I would have a degree more confidence I get where you lean to, Lynam, because the problem is anyone with that amount of money is probably going to be shady to some extent. So I think it's very tricky. But what we obviously do need is someone with deep enough pockets to ensure our continued survival and to ensure that a half-built stadium is a fully-built stadium that we own as well, but we're not just tenants of. So whether it's someone coming in alongside 777, I know that's been floated, it gets very confusing. I think the unsurprising thing is it's taken this long to start maybe casting the net a little bit wider, which, again, points to Majeri's, well, weirdness. I think I said that the last time out where we spoke about him. It's just been such a strange tenure, and this is another weird part of that journey with him. But we're certainly becoming a more sellable asset by ensuring our survival, and with, you would imagine, nearly at the point where deductions and court hearings and all sorts of other scary sounding things start to, you know, appear in the rear view, we become a bit more, well, all of the good stuff that we talked about, whether it's on the pitch or that atmosphere within the stands, we become more of an asset, something that you'd want. Whereas right now, with all this uncertainty, it probably has been trickier to sell Everton as a club, as a brand. So someone coming in, yeah, it needs to happen, doesn't it? I just hope it gives us that bit of security. And also, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if things drag on too long, does Majeri have to start trying to fund things himself for a while? Because surely we've got bridging loans from MSP, from 777, from rights and media. It's a heck of a mess, isn't it? So it is going to be someone with very deep pockets, which means probably someone I wouldn't want to go for a pint with, unless they were buying. So there is that, but at least someone with the pockets to get us where we should be, which at the minute is as far away from a relegation zone and from having to crawl through Twitter on a daily basis, wondering where the next bad news is going to come from, just to a point where we can enjoy Everton again. That's all I ask for.
Yeah, I mean, with the huge money that's coming from the Middle East, you know, effectively state ownership, I suppose there's several bridges that have been crossed there that probably won't be allowed to be crossed again, it's a very different scenario now than when even Newcastle were taken over. And I don't know whether that might change who could be interested from that area of the world, because I'm not sure that will happen again, what happened with Newcastle. But no, I mean, I've got no info on anything, really. We need a resolution to this. We need to be able to start from scratch. That's the biggest gift anybody can give us, really, is to be able to start from scratch and start building the club back to where it should be again. And if that does mean that they're looking in different areas for that, then, you know, as long as it's not a Newcastle scenario, which I still can't believe went through, then that's at least a start. But let's see. I mean, you know, it feels like we can kick the can at least this down the road another month or two on this one now, because it looks like we're going to be okay, and it looks like there's going to be a point where this really does have to be sorted out in the summer.
Agreed. Well, that'll do it, Blues. It's so much nicer when we win, isn't it? Can we do that a bit more often now, eh? Same again Wednesday would be nice. Thank you, as always, for listening, Blues. Maybe a derby miracle will coax us back onto the air for an instant max reaction. But regardless, we'll speak to you again in the near future. Until next time, take care and up the toffees.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.